We're back with Nikki McCann-Ramirez talking about Marjorie Taylor Greene and her rift from Donald Trump. I mean, you know, it's an absolute gift for the opposition party. How have Democrats responded to this? I mean, there's been some jokes. I think Jamie Raskin saying that the Democratic Party would welcome Taylor Greene whenever she chooses to switch sides.
We are a big tent. We must be a huge, vast tent. I say this is a party that's got room for Marjorie Taylor Greene if she wants to come over. We got room for anybody who wants to stay.
Not all Democrats love that, even if it's a joke. Do you think they see her really as a potential ally in the battle against Donald Trump?
An ally of convenience, perhaps.
For sure.
Because I do think one of the factors here is that the Republican majority in the House is so narrow and the midterms are barreling toward the House of Representatives. If you can manage to siphon off those four votes you need to get something passed as a Democratic Party, why not make the effort? And as Americans, as voters, become more put off by Trump's immigration policies, by the clear economic hits the country is taking under the tariff regime, as they become really disillusioned. And Democrats, that's a gift on a silver platter. That's something you need to exploit. If there is a chance that you could potentially pass policies that are actively beneficial for the population, but not only that, make Democrats look good. At a moment in time when Democrats really need some image rehabilitation, jump on it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think you're right to read the vulnerability, the frailty of Donald Trump. Polls saying some 63% of registered voters think Trump has fallen short on the one thing he was elected to do, which is the economy. Instead, all the stuff about, you know, building ballrooms, which we've covered on the podcast, and the knocking down the East Wing, people are noticing that. So in a way, Taylor Greene sniffing the air, realizing the way things are going and making that break. You know, she's obviously an ambitious politician. Question, I suppose, is how ambitious is she? People always ask who, you know, the battle for the Republican presidential nomination in 2028, J.D. Vance, is in pole position. Do we think it's even conceivable that she, ambitious woman, is thinking of that?
Oh, wow. I think she's probably thought about it. I don't think there's a member of Congress who doesn't see themselves one day in the Oval Office. I think the limitations of Greene's position are really clear, and I think that's something she's battling against. She is, of course, the poster child for the MAGA movement, regardless of how Trump feels about her right now. She is one of the most recognizable names in Trumpism. And that's baggage you don't get rid of really easily. And of course, we're only in the first year of this term. But depending on how that goes, that simply might be electoral poison in the future.
Yeah, we absolutely can't know what the exam question is going to be in 2028. Yeah. And you're right to give us that caveat. Just a last and in a nutshell judgment, hard to push you to this. But on Epstein and how damaging, it does seem as if it has really rattled the president. We might come on in a moment to an example of that in our what else question. But the sense that this is something different, to what extent do you think this could actually be the issue that does finally, you know, break Donald Trump from his own supporters or even in some way bring him down?
I think it's a major component in a very toxic cocktail that could really render Trump effectively a lame duck president. I've gotten this question before, and I come into conflict about it because obviously Trump has done so many things that should have tanked his presidency, that should have resulted in an impeachment or a resignation or, you know, a loss in his subsequent bids for the White House. Teflon Don, nothing sticks. This issue, he can't escape it. However, we've been dealing with it for some time now, and it hasn't fully brought down the White House. It hasn't resulted in a resignation. But what I think it does do is show itself as a very visible, very emblematic reminder of the way in which Trump sometimes treats his own constituents as if they were stupid. It was a promise that he and members of his administration made to supporters that they were going to come in and provide transparency the same way that he promised that he would come in and fix the economy and make life better for Americans. And I think where those two things convene is, to me, the Epstein scandal is sort of at its core a very clear portrayal of the way the rich and the powerful play around with people's lives with the expectation of impunity. And it's something very direct in the Epstein scandal, which is sexual abuse of young girls who were unable to fight back. And you also have this very clear portrayal of the way the powerful and the wealthy are making decisions about people's lives without any sort of accountability, about their healthcare coverage, about their ability to afford food, where the president is playing around building a ballroom that's going to cost more than most Americans will ever see over the course of their lifetime, where he's accepting literal gold bars from foreign governments that want him to provide favorable policy. And at the same time, it is this portrait of men with the levers saying, I don't care what this does to your life. I don't care what the consequences are for you because I'm getting what I want. And I think voters even subconsciously feel that. And that's why I think this has resonated.
Nikki, we do always like to ask our guests, as you know, because you've been with us many times before, a what else question, something usually different. But I wonder if this is related. It was an episode on a very noisy Air Force One involving a question from the Bloomberg reporter, Catherine Lucy. And she asked Donald Trump about the Epstein files last Friday. If you couldn't quite make that out, it was Donald Trump pointing at the reporter and saying, quiet, piggy. Now, that phrase has developed a life of its own on social media. It's become a sort of two-word meme. We've seen Trump lash out at journalists before. He did it again, actually, when he had the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia at his side. He didn't like the question. Also, actually, a woman in that case, journalist. There does seem to be something that cuts through about this two-word phrase, quiet piggy, more than the others. What's your take on this episode?
I think it was a real glimpse into the man Trump still is, but really publicly was pre-presidency. It's kind of been lost over the last decade because everything is embroiled in politics. There's this constant news cycle. But Trump and the way he views women has never gone away. It hasn't really changed. We can rewind back to the Access Hollywood tape where he talked about sexually assaulting women, the E. Jean Carroll case. It's very clear that the president, at the end of the day, still sees the value of a person largely based around gender and their appearance. And for me, that moment, that quiet piggy, he's not just rude and sexist. He's also really cruel. And he kind of gets off on it. And it was a really disgusting display. But I think every once in a while, we do get those reminders of who this man is. And it's on all of us also to pay attention.
Yeah, I think that will strike a chord. Just that sense that he is shaken, rattled. He's off his game by these recent events. And I think that really did come through. Nikki McCann-Ramirez, always a great pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for joining us on Politics Weekly America.
Thank you so much for having me, Jonathan.
And that is all for this week. The producer is Tom Glasser, the executive producer, Maz Ebtahaj. I'm Jonathan Friedland. Thanks, as always, for listening.